Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, January the 13th. We woke up today about 36. It's about 41 right now, but we had a beautiful afternoon. Sunshine, just beautiful afternoon. I went out and I did my walking, and it was just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful afternoon here in North Texas. Well, today we're going to talk about the shutdown. I have a few thoughts about the Democrats, gasoline crisis in Mexico. That is really interesting. And, of course, what's going on down in Venezuela with, almost a rebellion, not literally a rebellion, but a political rebellion against Maduro, not just in Venezuela, but really pretty much in Latin America. But I want to begin with this story. We had another one of these headline stories. You know, this was in the New York Times, and I think there was something like that as well in the Washington Post. But basically, the story at the New York Times, if you read the headline, it says, it basically says that the FBI was investigating President Trump because they thought he was an agent, a Russian agent, a Russian mole in our government. And that's sort of the headline. I mean, when you read that, it's pretty serious. But then when you read the story, what you're really finding out is that this sort of began after President Trump fired Director Comey. By the way, I think that was the right thing to do. Director Comey was completely the wrong man for the job, and Hillary Clinton would have fired him as well. That's the irony of all of this, is that Hillary Clinton would have fired Director Comey within minutes of assuming the presidency. And if you go back and you listen to all those videos of Democrats calling for Comey's head, it was pretty clear that Comey had made some enemies on the Democrat side. But when you read the story, when you get down to the eighth or the ninth paragraph, it pretty much basically says, well, yeah, but we don't really have any evidence that he's an agent or he's an infiltrator or whatever. You know, we just wanted to write a story. And then they wonder why President Trump talks about fake news and why he gets such a response from fake news, or when he says fake news. I mean, I think this was a story, but the New York Times, at the very least, they should have had a different headline. I'll put it this way. They want to write the story, that's fine. But the headline should have been different. The headline and the story really don't match. And I'm just wondering why they do this. It's not helping journalism. I don't think it is. And it just basically distances, I think, people more and more from what they like to call the mainstream media, whatever that means. But I just find this whole article to be, you know, just out of, you know, just I'm just sick of these articles. And we've been doing nothing but this for 2 years. We've been having these leaks and this leaks, and somebody close to the investigation said this, and somebody close to the investigation said that, and none of those leaks have really turned out to be anything other than maybe just partisan leaks. And now we have over the weekend Jonathan Carl, who's a pretty serious guy from ABC News, basically saying that his sources are telling him that the Mueller report is not going to be much of a report after all. It's going to be somewhat anticlimactic. I have no idea what Mr. Mueller is going to report, but I wish that everybody would just take a step back and let him report whatever he's going to say before we start writing all these articles. And as far as this New York Times story about Trump being associated with the Russians, they tell us there's no evidence, but anyway, they wanted to do the headline. I just don't think that's good for the industry of journalism. I'll just put it that way. I don't think it's good for journalism one bit. Well, the Democrats. I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning about the Democrats. The Democrats are moving so far to the left. It is absolutely incredible to watch. You have Senator Warren, you have Julian Castro here in Texas, you have the lady in Hawaii who says she's going to run. Then you have, they're saying that Senator Gillibrand is going to be joining soon. Altogether, there's about 15 or 20 people who have some kind of idea of running, including Vice President Biden and Secretary Clinton. So this is a big group. Even Secretary of State John Kerry has been rumored to running. And then you have people like Bloomberg, and then you have people like that fellow in California, I think his name is Steyer, you know, the billionaire out there in California. All of these people are apparently going to be running for president. All of them are to the left, just left center, and some of them are really left center. And I'm just beginning to realize, you know, how in the world do any of these people really expect to win? Now, I suppose if President Trump's economy is a disaster in the fall of 2020, and if everything goes to heck, I suppose one of these people could win. But right now, I don't see the economy going to heck in the summer of 2020. In fact, it could actually be doing pretty good. I don't think the country is going to be in the mood for Medicare for all, especially when they find out how much it's going to cost. I still think the country supports President Trump on the idea of border security. And I just think overall, these people are going way too far to the left, way too far to the left. And I think they're really risking pushing the party so far to the left. The real question is, whoever the nominee is, and that's going to happen sometime in the summer of 2020, the nominee is going to have to probably go back to the center, because they have to. That always happens. And how do you do that at the Democrat convention, the kind of convention, I think, made up of primary delegates like the ones we're hearing about? I mean, that's going to be a very left-wing convention, completely exhausted with identity politics and all of that. How are they going to move the party to the center? I don't see it. And that's why I continue to believe that, as bad as it may be for President Trump, he's somewhere in the 40s, 46, 45, 42, depending on what poll you want to look at. I just think that the Democrats, at the end of the day, I think a lot of Americans are just going to say, you know what, I'm not crazy about Trump, but he's better than the alternative. And I think that's why I continue to believe that President Trump will be reelected, and be reelected, I'm not going to say easily, it depends on the scenario, but right now, I think he is going to win. He's going to be reelected, because the Democrats are going way too far to the left, and there isn't a centrist Democrat out there saying, folks, what are we going to do about all these Trump voters? Are we just going to discard all of them and just, not worry about them? So Democrats, I think they really need to look at what they're doing, because I don't think they're being very smart right now in having all these candidates who keep pushing the party further and further to the left. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Gareth Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlo's website on the show information, so click on that. It'll take you to his website. You'll be able to see where he's playing around town. We say happy number 80 to Sandy Valdés Pino, who was a Cuban baseball player back in the 1960s. I had the chance to meet him, by the way. He's a very nice man. When I met him, of course, he was a lot younger, but after baseball, I think he became a scout with the Yankees. So happy number 80 to Sandy Valdés Pino. On this day in 1954, Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe were married. It only lasted 274 days, but it was a very consequential wedding, to say the least, in 1954. And in 1973, the Miami Dolphins won the Super Bowl, but that was the year that they were perfect. They literally, they were perfect during the season, 14-0, and then they won every postseason game, including the Super Bowl, to finish 17-0. An amazing, amazing performance. A couple of other teams came close to that. The 86 Bears won 18 games but lost one. And the most interesting one was the 2000, I forgot what year it was, New England Patriots, who were perfect until they got to the Super Bowl. They had won 18 in a row, 16 regular season, 2 postseason, and then they lost in the Super Bowl. So they went 18-1. That's pretty incredible, an incredible performance, to say the least. Well, down in Mexico, they're having a gasoline shortage, and, there's all kinds of theories going around as to who's responsible. It appears the easiest explanation is that there is a corruption problem, not a shock for anybody who follows Mexico, but apparently the pipelines are being broken and gasoline is being stolen right on the pipelines. You've also had some gasoline trucks that have been stolen. And there's all kinds of theories as to how this is happening, all kinds of speculation, all kinds of conspiracies. I have even heard people say that it's an inside job, meaning that people inside the oil monopoly are actually orchestrating these things, and they take gasoline from the pipeline, and then they turn around and they sell it in the black market to other retailers or to other people. Again, I don't have any evidence of this, but the Mexican government is right now really dealing with the shock of gasoline shortages. The bottom line is that Mexicans are not accustomed to gasoline shortages. In fact, one of the nice things about Mexico is that there was always a lot of gasoline available. There was always a lot of gasoline no matter what part of the country you were in. And for a long, long time, gasoline in Mexico was subsidized by Pemex, so the price was very low. Now, in recent years, it's caught up with international prices, so the prices are about the same as they are here, maybe slightly more because they're not as competitive as we are in some of our gas stations. But the bottom line is that there was gasoline. If you needed gasoline, you could fill up your car. And that's an experience Mexicans are going through right now. And you have lines at the gas stations. You have a lot of frustration. And it's all being directed in a way at President López Obrador, who, you know, I don't think this was a problem that he was anticipating. I think he's been caught off guard a little bit by this as well. And, of course, he has to be very tender how he treats the oil monopoly, because the oil monopoly has a huge public sector union. I'm assuming much of that public sector union supported him for president. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that most of them did. So it's a very tender situation, but at the same time, a very frustrating situation in Mexico, because there's a gasoline shortage. And if you've ever been to Mexico City, that's a city of 20 million people. And I don't know how many cars, but I'm going to guess at least as many cars as there are people. I mean, everybody seems to have a car in Mexico City. Everybody seems to get around by automobile. And Mexicans like their cars. That's another thing that I've learned over the years. Mexicans like to drive here and there. They like to drive. And right now in Mexico, that's a little frustrating. Well, there is a big problem down in Venezuela. And that is that President Maduro decided to do his inauguration, to do his second or third inauguration, and he's still the president of Venezuela, and this is creating a lot of problems with the people of Venezuela as well as some of the countries around Venezuela. Brazil, for example, a major player, obviously, in Latin America, Brazil has said that we don't recognize Maduro as the president of Venezuela. They're actually recognizing the head of the legislature. Peru has cut diplomatic relations with Venezuela. Many, many countries are calling on Maduro to resign and step aside. The United States is doing the same thing. And I think a lot of people are coming to the realization that Maduro cannot govern this country. The polarization is huge. There is just too many problems for him to govern. And what somehow needs to happen, and he needs to be removed, and then there needs to be a provisional government, and then elections have to take place. Whoever the next president of Venezuela is, I don't know. But there has to be a new election, and it has to be transparent, and the people of Venezuela have to believe in their election. Because right now they don't. Right now it's a very angry country that feels as if they have an illegitimate president, and that's not a good thing. So we're going to keep an eye on that situation down in Venezuela. By the way, this is week three, I think, of the shutdown. I'm always frustrated by these shutdowns because they should not be happening. But I think the Democrats may be miscalculating public opinion here, and I think they may also be miscalculating their position. I don't think people are ready for the Democrats to do nothing and not come to the table. I think that's a big miscalculation. So the Democrats better come to the table, because I think the public will eventually start demanding that. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.